everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the turbo engine head.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. And before you say it, yes, we did fix our microphone. It's all better.
Can't you tell? Doesn't it sound better?
Anyway, yeah, what are we talking about this time?
Right, that's my job. Should have been the wormhole head. That would have been a good head. Mm. We're back at you with another episode of How to Run. This time, a space battle. Our faithful listeners will know that we occasionally dive deep into a concept about what we think is a way to successfully run a
thing,
a
or something
arc of whatever that concept is. Sometimes it's a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a session or two. Like we did one on a library, which I thought was really cool. Anyways, space battle.
I was thinking, actually, that, well, so we were doing up this outline for this and the stuff, and I was thinking this probably, almost everything here also applies to, like, if you were going to do a pirate ship, you know, a pirate ship-to-ship thing, or like a, you know, like a World War naval battle type of situation. Most of these things would apply to that. But, well, you ran a space battle.
So yeah,
we're talking space.
Mostly, spaceships. They would be the same, but the important thing about the space battle is the scale and scope, which I guess we should do all the signposts first. Yeah. So we're going to talk about scale and scope. We're going to talk about ship to ship. We're going to talk about boarding action. And then we're going to talk about doing both ship-to-ship and boarding action simultaneously. Because I think each of those works different.
Yeah.
So, scale and scope-wise, and I think this is why it's space battle is a little more tricky than just, like, a dogfight or a navy battle.
I wouldn't apply it to something like, you know, fighter planes. But I would apply it to some, like, you know,
not the, even with blimps.
Well, blimps are slow, I guess.
Fighter planes and blimps, like that one movie, Sky Captain, World of Tomorrow.
You know, I never saw that, and it's just sitting there begging for me to watch it. Probably, I don't know. Was it any good? No, it's fine.
No comment.
All right, it's a fun concept, like steampunk blimp stuff.
And space Nazis.
No.
Or was that a different one? No, that was that one.
It was? Right?
Yeah.
Space Nazis was... Shit, what was that one? Where they came from the moon.
Pretty sure that was Sky Captain, was it not?
No. Where there's a Nazi moon base, and they invade, like, modern-day United States? That's a totally different movie, I think. Or I guess I don't know Sky Captain. Sky Captain could also have moon Nazis.
We're going to have to brush up on our Sky Captain and Nazi lore.
Yeah, usually when I reference something, it's because I, you know, was thinking about it and I know a little bit about what I'm about to reference, but, I'm blanking on Iron Sky.
Iron Sky! That's the one with the Nazis. You're absolutely right. Different things.
Yeah.
All right, we had a little moment there.
Anyway, but Iron Sky was space. There was some space stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So.
Point is that
space.
Yeah,
is really big.
In real life, space is huge, and like, you know, like a World War II naval battle could take, you know, like minutes or, you know, maybe even like an hour to perform maneuvers and stuff, but you're still, like, at least scale wise, like, you could usually see the enemy. either on some sort of, like, sure. device, yeah. or, like, you could literally see them on the horizon,
mm-hmm.
or, like, on your sonar if you're sub-hunting or whatever. And, you know, guns might take a couple seconds to traverse that distance, but a space battle in real-life space, if, you know, spaceships were shooting at each other, we're talking hours and hours and hours of, like, maneuver time and less hours, but still probably hours for, like, you know, missile flight and impact, and that's a lot of time to, you know, shoot it down with lasers or defense guns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, that time scale is hugely stretched out. But then when you're talking about the role-playing of characters, like, on the spaceship bridge or, like, in the cockpit or, you know, ready to do damage control in engineering or whatever, then you're back at, like, regular scale and stuff is happening at, you know, regular time,
mm-hmm.
in a much more, like, small, confined environment, probably with a lot of just, like, waiting in between while the ship stuff happens, so.
Right, and so, like, to speed that up in a ship, well, in a ship-to-ship battle, we'll talk about it more in a bit,
mm-hmm.
but the, like, rule of the general rule of, like, oh, like, combat only lasts, like, 6 to 10 seconds. Like, a round of combat is 6 to 10 seconds, right? Because yeah. it's, like, immediate action, shit's happening fast, like, people are swinging swords at each other.
Mm-hmm.
In space, that's not the case, especially, like, depending on how realistic you're going to be about it, and we're talking about that in a second, too. But, like, you can, like, go to bed, you can take a piss and eat a meal, and then there's still the same situation of, like, yep, the missiles are still coming at us.
Mm-hmm. We're waiting for them to, like, cross this sensor boundary right. before we, like, launch a countermeasure.
So, to speed that up, it's just kind of, like, the thing that I think, well, at least in Dangerous Spacemen, mm-hmm. the little space RPG that we made, it's just simplified to missiles take one round to hit.
Yeah. You blow it up a little bit, and you're talking rounds. You're not talking about rounds that it takes for player characters to do stuff. You're not talking about, like, how long it takes to walk across a room,
mm-hmm.
or how many times you can, like, swing a sword per turn. You're abstracting that to, like, they're spending a lot of time in between, you know, getting ready for stuff, watching computer screens, waiting for stuff to happen, and you're kind of, like, condensing that time. So a round is, like, how many things does a ship get to do in a round?
Mm-hmm.
And measuring it that way.
Right. And because space is so big and ships do be so small, so, like, the thing that we decided in Dangerous Spacemen is just, like, every player character gets a ship action.
Yeah.
Right? Is that, like, firing weapons or fixing something that's broken on the ship or maneuvering the ship, not themselves.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe they're prepping a weapon or they're prepping for boarding action or something like that, right?
Yeah. And you really, like, blew up the scale of Dangerous Spacemen ship battles. In that text, it's kind of implied that, like, the whole party is going to be aboard one ship, and, you know, you're going to do your ship action. So every player has a ship action per round, and you can only do a ship action on one of the things that you have. So, like, you know, one person can shoot the missiles, one person can control the defense lasers or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you don't have
defense lasers,
if you don't have four different defense lasers, then you can't use defense lasers four times. And you expanded that to us each running our own whole ship and multiple other ships in play, but the basic principle of that, I think, worked. Well, so
we'll get some more of that on the ship-to-ship combat. Yeah, yeah. So our point here in scale and scope is think about what limitations your system has and like how you can play in that and talk about that with your players so it's not a surprise when you're like, well, you don't have any defensive lasers.
Yeah.
And they're like, but I want them. Mm-hmm. So like decide, okay, guys, this battle is going to take two parts, right? There'd be a ship to ship and then there'd be a boarding action. And we'll get more into that later. Yeah. And probably there's going to be both. And we're getting into that later. Mm-hmm. The last point we want to hit here and kind of like the high end, like, you know, this is planning your session here, right? Yeah. You know, think about scope. What are you going to do? How are you going to communicate to the players, like, you know, give them spatial awareness? How are you going? Are you going to use a visual?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so then we really got to talk about realism and abstraction.
Well, I think that actually maybe should have been a bullet point here first, is like visual representation. And maybe this is...
I put it as a sub bullet.
Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, you got to, like, if you're going to use some sort of board or whatever, you got to, like, put that in front of your players. Mm-hmm. And say, like, okay, this is what this space means. And, yeah, okay, now we're talking about what you're abstracting. Mm-hmm. For the sake of visual clarity, you're abstracting something like, you know, millions of kilometers of empty space down to a, you know, a whiteboard grid.
Yeah, and because this is not... A space battle, I think, is something that is really hard to do in Theater of Mind. Almost impossible, I would say. Especially because space is notoriously 3D.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, you can't go under us. You can in space.
Yeah.
In space, there's a underneath you, there's above you.
There's also...
There's a behind you.
Like... There's a lot of like sci-fi touchstones that a lot of people are familiar with. Like you could say to someone like, oh, it's kind of like the Halo games, and people have a good idea, you know, like it's Marines on a spaceship with guns that are familiar and aliens and, you know, stuff like that. But most of the like media touchstones that we have for space travel and especially space combat, they're not. They don't take a lot of stuff like this into account. Like, you know, you think of your Star Wars is where people are just like standing on the deck. It's much more like our touchstones, our media touchstones for space combat are much more like Age of Sail naval combat. They're much more like Master and Commander, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, in terms of how people act during those engagements and what they do when they're aboard the ship. And yeah, sometimes the ship gets hit by a laser and it rocks to the side and people fall over, and you know, we're already like making some assumptions that there's like a constant gravity down aboard the ship, which doesn't necessarily make any sense.
Yeah, and there were a couple video games that were fucking around with that were trying to be like multiplayer shooters.
Yeah.
And I don't know if those... I mean, they're definitely not mainstream because you haven't been hearing about them recently.
But I will say, and this isn't great for space battle. Oh, okay. So Nebulous Fleet Command is the one that I never played, but I watched some videos about because I was like, this looks cool. They're doing it right. Where you had like a full 3D control over the environment or over your camera, and ships moved in three directions. They had to accelerate constantly along like an orbit path that you set, and then along that path you would like target and release missiles, and there would be timers and stuff attached to all that. And then for like the more personal, if you're interested, listener, there's probably only one. You know, I'm optimistic. Boundary was a PlayStation game that I don't think got much traction, but that was like very, very gritty, like zero gravity gunfighting, like a multiplayer shooter in zero gravity around like asteroids and a space station and stuff. And there are a few, but very not mainstream, like you said. There are a few good representations out there, but most people's go-to representations is probably something like a Star Wars or a Star Trek, where it's much closer to like Age of Sail or like a World War II battleship type of thing. Or like a submarine movie, maybe is the,
yeah,
you know,
that's a good
one. A submarine movie is probably what you end up thinking of, even if you don't mean to.
Right, which is fine, right? Because it's a game, and there is a limit to how much fun it is to play out the
right
actual real physics.
Yeah, the realism of, well, you know, this is going to be like a 40-hour passage around the other side of this planet, and when we come back into like their wedge, we're probably going to catch some missiles, so we got to be ready on the lasers to shoot down those missiles and have our counter missiles ready or something like that. And like, that can be really cool. That's a really dramatic moment, but that happens in a split second with hours of
real time.
Yeah. Quotes. Real time happening in between.
Yeah. Okay. So our recommendation is figure this stuff out beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably going to be some compromises to regard like realism.
Yeah.
Right? It's not going to be the most up-to-date science thing. Right? Which is fine.
Yeah.
But
you do want to like lay it out so your players know how they can interact with stuff.
Yeah. And be like, yeah, okay, so like ships can do this many things, and like this is what missiles do, and like you have defense lasers, but also like a death ray, etc. The last thing is, yeah, like how time's gonna work. We talked a little bit about it. Like, is it one round between, like, how much is one round of a ship, right? Oh, missiles take one round to hit, and regardless of like where you guys spatially are, unless there's like a really special circumstance, like I'm going to crash into that ship and then fire my missiles at the same time. Kamikaze, yes. It's like, okay, that's going to work different than, you know, if just I launch a missile at that ship. If it's in missile range, takes one round. So there's just going to be some compromises there, probably. Figure out what those are. Explain them to their players so the players can feel like they can make informed decisions. Because everybody, as a player, hates to get gotcha'd and be like, oh, well, like, now I do this. I spent a turn setting this up, and so here I'm going to do it. And then the game master says, actually, you can't do that. And they're like, why'd you let me set that up under the assumption that I could do that? It's like, so now I can't do anything. Great, I've wasted my turn. I've wasted two turns. Nobody likes that. All right, so actually, you've decided your scale, you've decided your scope.
You've decided how you're going to show, like, what tokens or minis and what board you're going to use to represent.
Actually, let's talk a little bit more about that.
Okay.
Because space is so big, we think the best thing to do is have, like, two separate visuals. Especially if it's going to be like a big battle where there's multiple ships and the players aren't on all of them, or, you know, are on all of them all spread out. So there's like the main tactical display that gives like, this is where everything in the combat is, right? But that could be millions of kilometers, right? Because space is so fucking big. So like, we think one big kind of, here's where everything is, and then scale it down for, like, you know, ship, player ships, and be like, okay, here's what your player ship can do, and, like, see, and, like, you're in weapon range of this, but only sensor range of this, and then, like, maybe you're not even in sensor range of this other thing. So just have a way to do both things.
Basically, like, a holistic display. Well, let's just talk about what you did when you ran this. Because I think...
Well, I mean, that is exactly what...
I know.
I did.
But specifically. So, he got out three boards, one for each of our spaceships, and we'll get into you know, your choices about that. You made a choice to have us each on our own spaceship. So we each had our own. Okay, so the only thing you didn't say is that, like, one is specifically, like, from our perspective, essentially, like, our point of reference versus the whole thing a little bit more abstract. And the way I like to think about it is, like, my board was, you know, the instruments in my cockpit, and then this other board was the, like, telemetry data that I was getting from all the other ships at the same time. And then, you know, what you're like, if you move this way, that, you know, is, or if, you know, if the bad guy ships move towards you in this direction, it looks like this on your display, but it might look slightly different over here. I don't know. I'm re-saying a lot of what you just said.
Yes. So I think, I mean, that's why it's important to talk about. That's why we're doing this episode, is because it's not trivial. So what I did, what Cosmo was trying to say, is there was one board
mm-hmm.
that had the whole battle mapped out in reference to, like, an omniscient narrator.
Right.
That said, you know,
like pulling up your mini map.
North is north. Game. North is north. East is east. South is south. West is west.
Yeah.
All right. And, like, yeah, I know you don't say that in space because there is none of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it was like, right? You know, it was an abstract view. Then each individual ship captain who were manning their own ships had their own, like, threat displays, if you will. So those worked in relation with the abstract omniscient display, where it's like, okay, I know that I'm going to flank across enemy lines and be on the other side of the enemies, right? But to me, those enemies are still forward because my ship is facing that way because, like, I burned across them, I flipped, and now even though I am going away from them, my thrust vector is towards them,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, I am facing towards them. All my guns are pointed forward at the enemies, even though on the abstract display, it shows me slowly moving away from them on the other side.
Right. And so, like, if I had turned, like, 90 degrees in the flat axis and been like, I'm going this way, I probably wouldn't have, because we drew on the board our, like, sensor range and weapons range and stuff. It would have been, so, like, I would have still been moving forward, but instead of moving forward with everybody else on the master grid, I would have been moving,
yeah.
you know, to the left. Mm-hmm. And I would have reoriented the enemy ships on my threat display, you know, to be to my starboard. Which is why that terminology exists, is because, like, you're always going forward in a ship. What is to right and left of mm-hmm. you changes based on orientation and direction with, you know, your ship as the focal point. But that being your point of view is limiting. So, yeah, the idea of, like, a god view. You know, a master display of all the different ships' telemetry and telescope and data.
I think there's an argument to be made there of, like, oh, well, why don't you just give everybody a tactical display and then let them, you know, role play communicating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's a valid point, I think. However, that is, or that can be, grueling because then it becomes a lot more about, communication in real life, and, like, you know, it's like, as captain of the ship, I would just tell them what I see on my board, and, like, we would communicate correctly, right? Rather than, you know, I have to actually say, and, like, they actually have to pay attention and understand. Same kind of, like, you know, thing we've talked about several times about performance roles and stuff. It's like, if I say my character does it and I roll, does it matter if the player like gets up there and like does the performance? It's like, oh, I sing a song to serenade the bar. All right, bitch, better improvise a song.
Sorry, I disconnected for a second there.
Okay. Shall we?
I heard the last.
Back bit. Up the tape, or what do we do? Roll, just roll, fix it in post.
Yeah, fix it in post, we're like we always do.
So I was saying, having a god view, there's an argument not to have a god view because then it encourages role playing of like ship captains communicating to each other, but then that gets into the, oh, like, if I roll for it, do I have to do it? And then, like, no, you don't necessarily have to do it because not everybody's comfortable. And it's like, well, I don't know how to actually communicate where the fuck I am on this board. Because I am not in the world. I am a player. Right.
So, and it, the way it ended up working is having a god view, but also all of us having our own separate tactical displays from our perspective meant that we communicated in terms of... We communicated in terms of, like, where we were and what we were doing and which way we were pointing.
And it allowed for better planning as a player and be like, okay, well, I see what the whole battlefield looks like. And as a character, my character would know that because they're in the world and live in it. Whereas me, I only know what the game master tells me.
Right.
So, like, you know, it's convenience over realism,
like,
or whatever.
It's sort of a step away from what might be considered like more authentic role playing, towards something, you know, like a real time strategy or a turn based strategy computer game where you are controlling big things at large scale, and some of the like role playing stuff. You can interject for flavor, but I feel like in the one that you ran, it did become a lot more about the, like, you know, the tactical strategy. And then, you know, as it went on, and we'll talk about the actual ship-to-ship stuff.
We're about to talk about it right now.
As it went on, some decisions... After an initial phase that we're going to talk about, and stuff started to get more spicy, and a little more, you know, close as the distances started to close in, then player decisions started to be made with a little bit more, like, role-playing consideration.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that takes us to our first point here on ship-to-ship stuff. Are the players on the same ship? Like, decide that and then figure out how that's going to play. I decided that they were going to be on different ships. And, I mean, I feel like I didn't run the best space battle in the world because there's a lot of things I would change. My original plan was completely different than what we did. So keep that in mind when we talk about it. But, so if players are on separate ships, you have to, as a game master, think about, okay, how is it going to go in terms of, like, how much shit can each player do if they're all in different ships, right? Like, you know, ship turns. All right. Does, in Dangerous Spaceman, the larger the ship, the more stuff, the more turns they can do, right? You know, just more weapon systems.
But yeah, the more systems aboard a ship that can be deployed, it's like you have more options on your character sheet. Think of, like, I don't know, you know, a D&D character with more stuff on their character sheet that you can, you know, deploy. More spell slots or more special actions or whatever.
Right, like, well... Okay, here's my action, which gives me an action allows me to take a second action, but then I use my action surge, which makes me take this action. Then I get my reaction, and then I have my bonus action, et cetera, et cetera. Right, so like larger ship, larger crew, more actions. Whereas if like everybody's on the same crew, there comes that like min-max point of, okay, we're on a attack ship that has, you know, missiles and defense lasers, and that's it. And so like one person flies the ship, one person shoots, one person defends. If there's a fourth player, what does that fourth player do, right?
It does really. I was thinking about this because the system for space combat in the Dangerous Spaceman game that we have been playing, but not very much space stuff, isn't very interesting, I think. I think it's a working concept, the way space battles work in that, where you like abstract out of, you know, some of the more like granular individual player actions, and you say as a player, well, okay, for my ship action, I deploy this weapon system. For my ship action, I try and repair this damage, stuff like that. But in practice, the one time we had a space battle with a couple of other ships on the board, and the entire party was aboard the same ship against a couple bad guy ships, different from what we're talking about right now, it did become a thing where, like, well, I'm the pilot, so every turn I roll to fly the ship. Good. I'm like, good, all right, you passed your roll, that means one of their incoming attacks doesn't hit because you did a maneuver. What does everyone else do? I, you know, prep an action to shoot down the other missile. Great. I shoot my missiles at them. Great. And it rolls over fairly quickly, which is, I think, the best thing that can be said about it. But it is kind of boring, especially mm-hmm. if, you know, you go through those first couple rounds and not much happens. And, you know, then it just, like, it doesn't stay interesting, which is this point here is, you know, how are you going to keep it interesting? And I think you made a smart decision to put us on separate ships. We each had a character, but we also had a ship, a character sheet for your ship with how many actions it had and our hit points and our all the different tools that we could use. And that became the character that you were essentially playing. And that worked a lot better because I was making more than one repetitive decision per right. round.
Like you're, you know, it was more like you were a character on the ground in a dungeon.
Yeah.
Where you could be like, okay,
yeah,
you know, I'm gonna move and I'm gonna shoot my bow this time. Next time I'm going to move and swing my sword, you know, etc.
But instead of, you know, a sword guy in a dungeon, I'm a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of a goblin, you know, a couple of goblins, it's a couple of smaller escort ships with a big demon that is, you know, the big enemy destroyer that we're trying to take down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Changing the scope and scale to that made it much more interesting. And I felt less trapped in, you know, a character who's strapped into a cockpit seat and more like, you know. And then the way I roleplayed that and the way I would advise anyone playing in something like this to roleplay it is like, well, you're the captain. You know, when you say, all right, for my ship actions, I got four ship actions. I'm going to hold two of them. You know, I'm going to hold that powder for in case they shoot missiles at me when it's their turn. And I'm going to use two of my actions, one to take a maneuver to advance forward and two to launch a missile at this guy. Great. Now, instead of me, it being my turn and being like, okay, the thing I do to help is I wait to fix something that breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Boring turn. Instead of that, I did several things thinking like I was a ship's captain ordering my crew to do a number of things in sequence. And it felt much more like I was participating and like I had a hand in what happened.
Yeah. I think if everybody is on the same ship, my recommendation would be skipping the initial few rounds of combat, right? Because in space, because space is so fucking big, we love to say it, the first couple rounds are just like lob long-range attacks, you know? Shoot missiles. They're probably going to get shot down, but maybe not. If I roll good, maybe not.
Right.
And then, like,
but you probably have like one or two whole rounds to take a whack at them. So instead of like four actions in which you need to keep your ship safe and shoot back, you're gonna be like, all right, I splashed two of them. I'll let those other two get a, you know, a range closer, and next round I'll deal with them. And in the long time that it takes for the two sides of the space battle to get close enough for quicker stuff to happen, you're just doing that.
So I would just, if everybody's on the same ship, I would skip that in a large space battle, right? That has its place if, like, you're getting ambushed from pirates, you know, coming out of an asteroid field, and you guys, you know, the player party is going, doing a supply run or whatever, right? That's a different scenario. Talking about a big space battle where, like, the point is kind of like a dogfight, where there's no
multiple
running
ships
away
to a side, and
at least not
at
first.
You're locked into it, yeah.
So, like, I would just skip that and get right into, like, the dogfighting-esque style where there needs to be maneuvers, and not just like I fly the ship, but like I want to slingshot around this like small asteroid, or like I'm going to zip in between these two ships so they can't shoot at us because they would hit each other or something like that. Right? Give something exciting for the pilot to do, right? In a dogfight, I think that's manageable. You know, weapon systems are online, they're shooting back. Defensive systems are online, they're shooting back. And the ship is taking some minor hits, right? Like, put them in range of, like, the point defense cannons that are just shooting tungsten slugs. And, like, yeah, you caught a couple tungsten slugs. There's holes in your ship.
Yeah.
Maintenance crew, go fix those holes so our air doesn't leak out. If they're all on the same ship, give them, like, a dogfight so everybody's got a job, rather than just, like, the long-range, you know, thing where, like, I fly the ship, I shoot back, I wait until we get hit, right? To keep it interesting. Because, yeah, over-repetitive, it's really easy in a space battle or a Navy battle, too. Long-range battles, I think, is the better overarching term. Because if you're just like, I shoot back and then I get undercover, even if it's like, you know, on the like player scale tactical grid map and they're across like a ravine,
yeah,
and they got guns because this is like a sci-fi or whatever, or this is Afterlife, and you're like, okay, well, I just pop out of my cover and I take a shot at them. Okay, I miss, I get back in cover.
Yeah.
Probably going to do the same thing next turn.
I think that's the reason why, you know, over the last 20 years, you think about, like, multiplayer shooter games, like sniping in Halo, sniping in Call of Duty. It's not really like snipering, you know. It's a very different thing, and it's more about just, like, using a different weapon where you can see really close, but the like, twitch sensitivity is way up. It's basically just practicing a different skill, because it doesn't fit with the pace of everything else that's going on. To, you know, to just like hide in a building or to hide in some bushes and wait for like one or two chances to take a good shot that you have time to take, especially while everyone else is running around having a good time. I think that's why, you know, the scale of sniping in video games has been so condensed, is because if it was more realistic, it just wouldn't be fun. And, you know, there are some games that push it out further and manage to push it out further at the same time as everything else going on. You know, like PUBG has decent sniping at range, but also really intense, you know, close quarter stuff inside the same house.
Yeah.
It can work, but
It's difficult.
Yeah.
Especially in a tabletop.
Because tabletop stuff's not real time. It's turns. And if you spend your turn saying, like, I wait for a moment, okay. You're waiting. I know that. Got it, you know, noted down. But also you didn't do anything I'm not asking you to roll. There's no result of what you did yet. And that, like, that can become uninteresting to participate in.
I think, yeah, it becomes uninteresting fairly quickly. Two or three rounds of that, uninteresting, right? Yeah. So on that vein of, like, you know, keeping it interesting, I think for a space battle, regardless of what your system says about fuel and ammo, there should be some special considerations, right? I would recommend fuel, forget it.
Yeah.
Everybody's got enough fuel to do what they want
for this, you know, whole
for this
fight.
Battle.
Yeah.
Right? After the battle, different story.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have any fuel anymore.
And you're gonna have to enter into a different mode of play to, like, scavenge the wreckage of these other ships for fuel to get home or whatever. But yeah, I agree. Like, during the fight, probably just don't want to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of the same thing of, like, you know, this philosophy that we've talked about in other stuff. Like, sometimes just don't ask for a roll for something. Because if you're asking for a roll and there's a possibility of failure, have you considered what happens if they fail? Mm-hmm. And if what happens when they fail isn't interesting or move anything along, right, or is fun to play out,
mm-hmm,
then probably just, like, assume that it happens. It becomes just a speed bump. And a speed bump that causes a flat tire if they don't pass it. And if you weren't planning anything interesting during that flat tire moment, or for that flat tire moment, then skip it. Because now you're like, oh, fuck. I just ground this to a halt.
It's like, great, you don't do that.
Yeah. You ran out of fuel. I'm like, oh, great. Okay, I drift now. I shoot at everything I can reach, and now I can't reach anything, and now I'm done. And now a ship is just not participating anymore.
Yeah.
And
which is way different than getting shot and, like, blowing your engine out. That's a different thing.
Right.
Right. Because that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that now you have to deal with aboard your ship.
Yeah. Ammo, though, I would limit ammo for, like, mainly just, like, missiles. Or, like, if your system has, like, yeah, a death ray, maybe that has ammo.
Maybe the... But, like, it's got to be worth it. There's a trade-off. If, you know, if your little weapons, if the fiction of your little weapons is they got, like, a laser battery or they got, you know, buckets of ammunition for them because they're designed to shoot a lot, they probably just don't do very much damage.
Mm-hmm.
And you can shoot them as much as you want.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's the thing. Is, like, how much damage does it do? Like, its lethality balanced with ammo.
Right. And so, yeah, a missile that, you know, oh, you roll, like, 2d12 here, that has the potential to, like, sink a medium-sized ship in a single hit. Mm-hmm. So, put, and, you know, we're talking about a system that some of you may not be familiar with, but just, like, conceptually, right?
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if a ship gets hit with a few bullets, knock a couple hit points off. Also, probably don't count those bullets.
Yeah.
They're, like, don't keep track of how many bullets there are. But if a missile has, or a death ray, or whatever space thing you've
got.
Big
gun.
If it has the capacity to, like, one-shot one of the major enemies, cool. I think that should exist.
Right, but it should be a scarce resource.
But, yeah, then you're like, okay, it's, you know, I've lined up my firing solution. I'm gonna launch the death ray, or I'm gonna launch one of my ship killer missiles. You should probably have to check one of those off as spent. And then maybe do something to, like, you know, negate their ability to shoot it down. Like, have one of your ships, you know, draw their attention or whatever so that all their guns are pointing this way and then a missile can slip through their protective screen, make it more likely to hit. And then, you know, not only are you playing tactically, but you're role-playing a little bit.
Yeah. Because I think playing tactically and role playing, is, like, the point of this, right? Is, you know, fun, tactical, but, like, also there's some role play in there, which is, why there should be a boarding option.
Boarding action.
Because, like, that is just something that I think is so fucking cool, whether it be, like, you know, naval combat or space combat, where it's like, if we can land some guys on that,
it's the dramatic part of any.
You can take them down from the inside,
ship to ship thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like the car combat in Mad Max is not really the same as like ships or space or whatever, but it is still like, then it's the fun part. Like, you can be driving next to each other and shooting at each other. Mm. But when someone jumps on, now there's a new thing going on. Now a fun, different, interesting thing is happening, as well as, you know, we're still flying, we're still driving, we're still, you know, in the rest of it. So probably you should set up your space battle so that there is some sort of like objective or reason for there to be some sort of boarding action.
Well, and like also I think there's just some natural ones where like we don't want to blow up the ship because we want it for ourselves, or to do enough damage, like we're out of missiles so we can't actually kill the ship without just like, you know, doing shitloads of flybys with our point defense cannons. So we're not going to do that. So we got to go overload the reactor.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
You're probably on opposing sides of some sort of conflict. There's probably information you could get inside. You know, you capture prisoners. Or rescue somebody. There's just like, there's a lot of implied stuff. All the same reasons why a pirate ship would attack another ship in, you know, in sail times. All of those things apply the same. A ship not blown up is worth more. Basically, it all kind of boils down to that.
Yeah.
Whether it be people on board or intelligence, information, documents, literal treasure, ammunition, fuel, capturing the ship itself.
Yeah, the ship itself.
You know, maybe they got a big dreadnought. You can't fight that big dreadnought in your, you know, in your scrappy Millennium Falcon, whatever.
Sure, but you can land a land a crew.
You could land a crew of raiders on there, and then suddenly you got a big dreadnought. Mm-hmm. If you can stop them from hitting self-destruct and shoot the captain or whatever.
Right. So, boarding action should be an option. What does that mean, though, in terms of the grander space battle? Well, I think it means switching back to the player, like, tactical grid, where it's like, now the scope has changed and the scale is different. Time works differently because now we're, you know, individual characters on a ship rather than a ship flying through space.
Yeah.
So, like, it basically goes back to just regular tabletop combat. But there's going to be some special things there because there's also a space battle going on, and like that we talked about why that's special, and like how big space battles are, and like the scale and scope of a space battle is a lot different than taking like a, I don't know, you know, 2,000 square foot ship.
Yeah.
So recommend, if you're going to do a boarding action and like actually zoom in all the way to the boarding action, all the players got to be involved in that, right? And that could be a little tricky about how to do that, especially with what we talked about, like, you know, if players are on their own ships and commanding their own ships, how do you get everybody on board?
And that seemed like the better way to do the space battle part. But then, how do you sync up that multiple different ships landing boarding crews at the same time? There's fun ways.
There's fun ways, like two characters.
Yeah. You could play as separate characters. There's also, you know, like sci-fi, maybe you
beam me
like,
down.
Yeah, beam me aboard after, like, oh, we've broken their shields. Now you can beam a boarding crew aboard.
Yeah.
Or, you know, shooting boarding torpedoes,
You
know, through the hull of the ship. And then, you know, and there's lots of fun sci-fi media that shows versions of that.
However you get on the ship, though, once you're there, it should scale down to
the regular
time and, like, movements. And, like, you know, each round is, like, 6 to 10 seconds or whatever the game
Yeah, whatever you know, game you're calls. Playing. But, like, the thing that we're familiar with, where, like, everyone moves and everyone takes an action or, you know, one of each or two of one. Back to that. Back to that, you know, classical tactical, you know, guys fighting other guys mm-hmm. and moving through familiar, normal-sized spaces. Right. But that presents a problem with...
Right, because even if you have... Everybody's got a... Do they call it just a transporter in Star Trek?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the transporter. But yeah. they say beam is the verb.
Yeah. Even if everybody has a transporter and beams onto the enemy ship, there's probably going to be somebody who's like, well, I'm going to stay on the ship so I can continue the space combat mm-hmm. while y'all, you know, take the destroyer.
I mean, if it's dramatic and there's anything interesting happening in space, then that's mm-hmm. almost a given.
Right. So there's probably going to be a party.
Well, yeah, like someone has to stay back and guard the ship or continue to fly the ship. Like who's going to get you off when it's time to leave
right.
or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can offload all of that to NPCs.
Yeah.
And narrate, or do the trick that you said of, and the trick that I tried to do in Our Dangerous Spaceman, which was to have everyone have a backup character or an alternate character.
Yeah.
You could do something like that,
mm-hmm.
but what is likely going to be happening is that you're going to be splitting mm-hmm. the party, and not just splitting the party like, you know, half the party goes down this path and the other one goes up these stairs in the same dungeon, and so you have to, like, you know, cut between.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are you cutting between, you know, two different groups in two different places, but you're cutting between two different scales and two different, two different scales of time passage, probably, mm-hmm. because the way we talked about, you know, running a ship like it's a character, an individual PC running a ship as if it was their character, that turn is probably taking, you know, like 10 to 20 minutes at the least. And you probably don't want to nail that down too hard.
Yeah.
Just in case, you know, it comes back to bite you. But
yeah.
Just, you know, think about it out there. And it doesn't make sense for, like, me to be running a character on board a ship and be like, I hide behind this crate and I shoot at that security officer. Okay, cool. You go through your role, resolve
that. Cut back to the space battle. Oh, you're still waiting for the missiles.
Yeah. But you have four other actions mm-hmm. to do. And just, like, it doesn't make sense that those would be happening at the same speed.
Yeah. So I think my recommendation is to do one of two things. Be very clear up front with your players, right? As we talked about in the, like, setting the scale and scope mm-hmm. of, like, there will be a space combat portion and then
that leads into
a boarding action portion, and those will be separate and everybody needs to go
mm-hmm. one way or the other. Like, you're getting off your ship and going, or mm-hmm. you have another character who's part of the boarding party or something.
Or do a both at the same time, right? Which is going to take some game master magic. because of the way what Cosmo just said, the way that, like, time works for both scales is going to be different. You're just going to need to think about how you want to run a boarding party simultaneously while a space battle is going on. Mm-hmm. Like, if one or two players stay captaining their ships and are like, okay, well, we're hold the other ships off and, like, you know, do what we can out here. You go capture the flagship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What does the flagship capturing look like? I think do not go full scale tactical. All right, here's the grid. The deck you're on is 20 squares by 20 squares. Mm-hmm. All right, you each have 5 squares of, you know, you have a movement speed of 5, 4, 3, you know, whatever. Don't go that in depth unless everybody's there, right? Because if there are people still fighting up in space, the boarding party has to at least be compatible with what's happening up in space.
Right.
And so, like, what I did was a kind of a weird middle ground where it was like, declare boarding party actions, still get a role in there based on your stats, but like controlling the whole boarding party.
It worked a lot like, and I think it worked really well in the main because you kept it at the same scale as everything else. So like, you know, Taylor's ship had 6 actions. Sharif's ship had 4. Mine had 4. I was no longer driving my ship, but you gave me a handful of actions, mm-hmm. on the ship, just like, you know, like how he said, my character was no longer the ship. My character was the whole boarding party, the whole raid. And that was kind of abstract. You didn't tell me how many guys I had on it or like what our loadout was, what tools we brought. It was just kind of assumed that
you had what you needed.
It was a group of guys and we brought guns and tools and probably like some computer stuff. And yeah, like declaring your multiple actions for a round of ship combat, you had me just declare, you know, okay, you landed here. It looks like this. Where do you try to go? Mm-hmm. And I said some objective-based things that we mm-hmm. tried to do. And so, some people might have required more information than this, and you might have to provide, listener, if you're trying to.
Mm-hmm.
But you and me have consumed all the same space media for the most part. Yeah. So, you know, when I was put in that situation, I was like, all right, I split my team, send half of it to engineering, capture the engine room, half of it to capture the bridge. I don't know where those are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a map. I don't have like a, you know.
I mean, you literally drew a map.
Though. Yeah, but like I didn't.
Because I asked you.
I didn't draw it like down to the individual passageways and rooms and stairways and stuff.
Draw me a spaceship big level.
Yeah. And so the actions that I were, that I said I was trying to take were very just like role play. They weren't right. And
that one was more, if I may,
yeah.
Theater of the mind.
Yes.
Where you had and like we drew a map, you drew an outline of a ship.
But it was just like here's the back, here's the front.
Here's the back,
here's the top,
front.
Here's the bottom, right. Essentially. The engines are here. I don't know where the bridge is, but I assume it's mm-hmm. more towards the front.
Yeah, which it was. So you made like kind of just role playing decisions of like, here's what my boarding party would like to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say, okay. What I did was all the boarding party roles were just contested.
Right.
So like I would roll and then Cosmo would roll based on his character who is leading the boarding party, use their stats. So like you get a bonus for a couple things. You got, you know, so a negative for a mm-hmm. couple things or whatever, depending on what you tried to do. I'd be like, well, that sounds like a toughness roll because it's mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your difficulty. And just kind of narrate, okay, well, there's some hard opposition in the engineering room. And, like, you guys aren't making any ground. Or, like, you guys are gaining ground.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do next? It's like, okay, well, we try to take control of the ship. It's like, okay, roll me that. Oh, you do, you don't. Kind of that. And then, like, you know, narrating what that looks like, giving some flavor, making it interesting. And then, like, you know, after a couple of those, pop back to the space guys.
Yeah. After, you know, a handful of actions, 3 to 5, mm-hmm. because that's about how many ship actions the other players who are still driving their spaceships, their character is still their spaceship. So the player who's now the boarding party and is essentially representing the whole boarding party, you ask him to do a couple things, kind of sped up. No more than, you know, what you allow the pilots mm-hmm. still, the ship,
yeah.
the captains who are still driving their spaceships, so that you're not really splitting the party anymore, even though, like, narratively, physically, conceptually, the party is split between a space battle and a boarding action. But in terms of turns mm-hmm. taken at the table and like how much of the pie each player gets, you're not cutting that super unevenly in favor of the more nitty-gritty real-time, you know, fight on board the spaceship, which is much more like a traditional role-playing encounter. Don't run it like a traditional role-playing encounter. Don't draw it out like a dungeon and run, you know, dungeon-style combat in it.
Because, so, here's a great example, I think, that will bring this home. In a space battle, splitting the party between, like, boarding action and space is like in a dungeon if you split the party and three people say, we're going to continue the dungeon, and two people say, we're going to go get help from the town that we left 4 days ago.
Yeah.
Right? So, that does not work, because if you are doing it all at the same scale, the three people in the dungeon probably spend 6 hours in the dungeon, say, right? They either die or survive the dungeon in 6 hours. But the people who go back to town 4 days ago,
they're going to spend 4 days travel time. They're going to spend 6 hours of in-game time
traveling the first leg of the journey.
Okay, I walk. Okay, I walk. Both my actions, I walk.
I walk.
Okay, you walked 60, 70 feet. Now it's not your turn anymore.
Right.
You're 60 feet away from the
goblin.
Dungeon entrance.
So you're fighting this goblin. Right? So you walk again. Okay, you walk again. Okay, great. So there's a dragon now.
Yeah. And essentially you're like not even playing those people who've left. You don't want to get into a situation like that.
Yeah. So do a middle ground of like kind of like entire boarding party roles and like single roles representing onboard movement and entire combat turns distilled to a single role.
Yeah.
To make it compatible with the space battle.
Or have everyone go into space battle, hit, or have everyone go into boarding action, essentially pause the space battle outside, and now the rest of this session, or maybe that's the end of the session, next session is boarding. The boarding action, and we're back to, you know, normal tactical, everyone has 30 feet of movement, everyone can attack once or twice, and we're doing, you know, regular exploration and combat turns.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Woo. Space battle.
Should we recap?
Yeah.
All right. So this was how to run a space battle. We started talking about before you run it in the planning stage.
Figure out your scale
and scope.
And scope. Time is different. It's not different. Time still passes essentially at the same. But turns.
Turns mean different time.
Turns mean longer amounts of time. You need to adjust, you know, everyone's conception about that. You need to get everyone on board with what, how you are visually representing things that are pretty abstract, like the vastness of space or the time it takes for, like, a missile to loop around a moon to get on target or something like that. And then, you know, realism versus, you know, what you're abstracting, get everyone on the same page about that. Do you have to worry about, like, your oxygen, your gravity,
Right, how hard is it to maneuver? What does a maneuver mean in your system, in your world right now?
Is it floaty, like, you know, aboard the space station, the International Space Station, where the, you know, the astronaut nerds do science? Or, you know, are you, like, doing something more like Star Wars or Mass Effect, where people are like running urgently around a flat space with a traditional like gravity. Up and down. You got to decide and get everyone on the same page about that.
Yeah, and that's going to be very important because in ship-to-ship combat, you might have players on different ships that have different spatial like awareness or like
different points of reference.
Different points of reference, thank you.
In a master display, but then with their display being different based on their direction, probably, because space flight is just always up or always forward or always down or whatever. So, like, forward is their point of reference.
Yeah.
And that could change what they're looking at compared to the tactical display.
Right, because,
or the,
yeah.
You know, the zoomed out god mode, god view.
Yes. Right. maybe they're all on the same ship, and if they are all on the same ship, then like there's got to be some consideration of like how to avoid just overly repetitive roles where it's just I fly the ship. So like if they're all on the same ship, maybe more of a dogfight situation. Mm-hmm. If they're all on different ships, there could be some more time and some more, you know, slowly strategic movements there, right? Different scenarios for how you're going to play that ship-to-ship combat. Boarding action. Because boarding action is cool, there should be at least an option for boarding action, mm-hmm. right? But that's going to mean a couple things, right? First thing, it's going to be different than the space combat because a boarding action takes place on a single ship, which is a contained space, which...
At a different scale.
Yeah. At a different scale, things move differently, right? Oh, 6 to 8 seconds is a round in a boarding party, but in the space combat, 20 minutes could be a round, right? Mm-hmm. Again, what Cosmo said earlier, don't think too hard about it. You might break your brain trying to do that conversion. But just know that it does work differently. So, like, recommendation... If it's a boarding action, all the players got to go. If you're going to make it tactical, everybody got to go. Otherwise, it's going to be too hard.
Yeah.
If not everybody want to go, then there's going to be a middle ground, right? Doing both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Instead of running a ship like your character, the player who does the boarding action runs the whole boarding raid like a character.
Yeah. Right? So you have your captains captaining the ships. And then you have your, like, boarding captain captaining the boarding party.
Right.
All that, if you follow those rules exactly...
Good space battle.
You're going to have yourself a good time. Also, if you don't follow all those rules exactly, you're probably going to have a good time.
Yeah. It's just a fun thing you should try.
Because it's fun.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for this episode mm-hmm. of Two-Headed Game Master.
By the time this comes out, I don't think we're going to have the website up anymore, so just head on over
The website will be up.
Well, yeah.
But don't go there.
Yeah, we're
go
done.
Go to the Patreon.
We're done with it. Yeah. Go to the Patreon. We're setting up a free tier. Anything that we have to, like, download or whatever, if you want to just, like, chat with us or... see what's what. We're just moving everything to Patreon. People don't go to websites like in the Homestar Runner days. mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense for us to keep it up. We also weren't using it for anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Head on over to Patreon. That's how you can connect with us. You can email us. Get involved in the Discord, stuff like that. That's where we're going to be doing stuff. Basically from now on. So, yeah, check that out. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill is Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see y'all on the next one.
See you on the next one.